Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg.
And I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East,
and the Jewish world.
Hello, welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. It's Monday, January 17th. I'm Jessica Steinberg, joined today by political correspondent Tal Schneider and health and science writer Nathan Jaffe. Hello to you both.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
Nathan, you have a very fascinating analysis on our homepage right now about Israel, the fourth dose campaign, and there is information from the World Health Organization about boosters and what their impact is. So if you could first take a step back for us and explain to us what is considered a booster.
So initially, a course of coronavirus vaccination was two shots. Two shots, one followed by the second shot. What we saw was that third shots were amazingly effective in actually kind of developing what seemed to be that initial immunity. What we have now is a shift in the medical community from people saying, okay, vaccination, inoculation means two shots, to people saying, actually, let's talk about three shots as the initial dose. We're not talking about fringe opinions. We're talking about Stanley Plotkin, inventor of the rubella vaccine, world's top vaccinologist, according to many, urging the US authorities, saying, please stop talking about the third dose as a booster. Tell people that this is the initial dose of the vaccine. And that's important because it helps us when we're listening to these conversations at the moment about boosters. Are boosters good? Are boosters bad? Always ask the question, right. When you're saying boosters, what are you talking about? If you're being pro-boosters, anti-boosters, are you talking about shot number three? Or are you talking about everything after shot number three? Really important distinction.
Okay, so now bringing us back to Israel right now, where those who are over 60 and those who are immunocompromised, as I have understood, are receiving a fourth shot. So that would be considered a booster, according to your explanation?
Yeah, that's a booster. And the reason that it's been so unsettling for some Israelis in recent days is that what happened is the World Health Organization warned against the repeated use of boosters. So just as many Israelis have had their fourth shots, the World Health Organization put out a statement saying that a vaccination strategy based on repeated booster doses of the original vaccine is unlikely to be appropriate or sustainable. So people who just had their fourth shot see the World Health Organization saying, hey, this kind of repeated boosting isn't appropriate or sustainable. And that worried people. And people are saying to me, hey, does that mean that our vaccines are not effective? Does that mean that we're not getting protection from the fourth shot? And that's the background of why I wrote this analysis that's on the site at the moment, because we need some nuance here. And it doesn't mean that at all. In fact, the initial studies seem to show that people's antibodies are rising after a fourth shot, rising quite significantly. After a fourth shot, antibodies don't always equal added protection, but they're a good kind of pointer. So it doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that fourth shots aren't helping people. Rather, this is the World Health Organization saying, hey, this isn't a good strategy to be taking the vaccine shots that are available to us and instead of distributing them around the world so that people can have their initial shots, instead of doing that, you're using them in wealthy nations to give people yet another shot. So it's a much more nuanced kind of argument. It's the World Health Organization saying, as a global strategy for ending the pandemic, this is not a good approach. And that's not surprising. That's what we've been hearing from the World Health Organization during the pandemic, but it just kind of struck a nerve for many Israelis who've been boosting recently.
Right. That's interesting. Obviously, World Health Organization thinking globally further on Omicron, because, of course, that's what we turn to you for these days. And when things are feeling tense and a lot of this variant around us, what else are you thinking about right now in terms of the variant, in terms of antigens, in terms of antigen testing?
So one of the things I've been thinking about is that we're all talking about Omicron. We don't talk about coronavirus or COVID anymore. We're all talking about Omicron. And part of me thinks that's the reason that Everybody spent a few minutes at the beginning of this finding out how to actually pronounce it. How do we pronounce it? Is it Omicron? All the Americans said to me, how do we pronounce it? So now we've learned, we all like to kind of use that instead of saying coronavirus anymore. But I think the big question for Israel at the moment is, we need to remember that high precautions against coronavirus came about because the concern was that our health systems could be overwhelmed. And that's very easy to forget what we mean by could be overwhelmed. Could be overwhelmed doesn't mean having busy coronavirus wards. Health system being overwhelmed means that your relation who has to go in for chemotherapy is told you can't come for your chemotherapy because all of the wards are full of coronavirus patients. If you have an accident and you need to go to the emergency room, that you're waiting overnight because the doctors are so overwhelmed with COVID patients. Hospitals overwhelmed means the doctors may even be choosing how to allocate resources between different COVID patients. So we need to remember that because I think a lot of us have gone to a place where we're looking at the daily figures of how many people are infected or other variables and parameters and saying, we're deep, deep, deep in crisis, but we need to remember. And in actual fact, the hospitals are not full at the moment. The hospitals are not overwhelmed at the moment. But we can't be complacent. And that's what our eye is on. Our eye is on is the strategy avoiding undue strain on hospitals. And we really don't have the answer. We just hope that infections will be not on such a high level that very serious cases will filter through in such large numbers. And that if they are filtering through in large numbers, that it's staged out, that it's spread out, that it's not a whole kind of flurry all at once, which is just too much.
That's helpful, Nathan. Thanks. We're going to take a short break now. Hey, it's Jessica Steinberg. If you have an important message you'd like to share with people who care deeply about Israel and the Jewish world, there's really no better way to do that than by advertising in our podcasts. Reach the Times of Israel's unique community with an audio ad. For more information, email ads@timesofisrael.com. That's ads@timesofisrael.com.
Shalom, dear listeners. This is Daniil Hartman.
And I'm Yossi Klein Halevi.
Together we host the podcast For Heaven's Sake from the Shalom Hartman Institute.
These have been some of the most challenging days for me personally, for Israel, and for the Jewish people. And one of the ways in which I've gotten through this is that I've found solace and meaning through discussions with my dear friend and study partner, Daniil Hartman.
And I hope that the Times of Israel listeners will join us as we continue to tackle the pressing questions facing the Jewish people here at For Heaven's Sake, which has become the number one Judaism podcast.
Well, Daniil, I'd also like to recommend the Identity Crisis podcast hosted by our colleague and friend Yehuda Kurtzer. It's a series of fantastic conversations with leading figures in Jewish life, thought, and culture.
You know, for decades, the Hartman Institute has been a preeminent destination for Jewish ideas and learning. Now you can access Hartman ideas on these chart-topping podcasts at shalomhartman.org/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll be privileged to help guide you through these challenging and even unsettling times.
And we're back. Tal, we discussed at length yesterday the possible plea bargain for former Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. What will it mean, this possible plea bargain for Bibi and the Likud party, of which he is still the leader?
Right. So one of the demands of on behalf of the general attorney is for Netanyahu to step down from public life. It means he has to step down as a position leader, as a member of the Knesset, and also as the Likud chairman. Now, yesterday, some of the Likud leaders said that Netanyahu is still considering staying as the Likud leader, but stepping down from his other, Knesset duties. That seems really weird because if he plans to navigate the Likud. I mean, the chairman of the Likud can still nominate ministers or lay them off and control them and choose who gets what, ministerial job. So if that is the case, this is a huge hole in this play garden, because Netanyahu is still a public figure, a very strong political public figure. I guess this is not going to take place. If he really steps down, then the Likud is going into a very turmoil times. They have to choose a leader. They last time they did it was 2008. This is the last time they had. There were some, people tried during the years, but, none of them really succeeded to go through the, any obstacles of overcoming Netanyahu. So we do see right now a fight on the top of the Likud. Israel Katz is one of the most strongest people in the Likud. He was the finance minister. We could actually say a failing finance minister, because he did not put a budget for such a long time. And you have the former Speaker of the Knesset, Yuli Edelstein. I will not go down the list of names. The leading candidate probably is Ner Barkat, the former mayor of Jerusalem. And those three are trying to, battle each other through the very complicated box of the Likud constitution, or the Likud bylaws, if you want. You know, what's going to be the procedure, how long it's going to take. And we are expecting a bloody fight between those people.
Right. I know that there is a fundraising campaign right now for Bibi, which just seems so ironic, of course, like a crowdfunding campaign that has been tweeted about by actually several anchors from the Channel 14 news station, which is a very pro-Netanyahu channel. And it seems nuts in parts of our world and parts of our reality that there would be a fundraising campaign right now for this former prime minister who is on trial for graft.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's even more strange than you mentioned, because he cannot accept the money anyways, whether the campaign is successful or not. You know, he's standing for trial for getting gifts. He's not allowed to take any of those funds without a prior written approval of Israel's, the Knesset Ethics Committee. The Ethics Committee of the 24th Knesset was not convened because the Likud was opposing to setting up the committee. That's, a bit against the law, but this is the situation at the moment. So he's unable to touch that money, yet those people have already raised 2.5 million shekels in less than 24 hours. This is, a huge campaign. Lots of people are giving money in small sums. There is no control of the way people can raise money for, for any cause that they would choose. The person who is heading this, as you said, is an anchor in Channel 14, and is also a Netanyahu loyalist. And he is a former member of the Knesset, not from the Likud party, by the way, but he was in the Knesset for a brief time a couple of years ago. He's a very self-righteous politician turned into anchor. And he was in the media before he was a politician. So his name is Ynon Magal, by the way. And he comes from a group of loyalists for Netanyahu who have a very strong vocal appearance in Israel's media and social media, on radio stations and so on. So this is what he's doing since yesterday. He's fully aware that Netanyahu cannot take the money. He said on radio stations that the money might be returned to the donors, or maybe will be donated to some right-wing NGOs.
One more question, Tal. You mentioned Ner Barkat, the former Jerusalem mayor, as a possible front runner for the Likud party. But it would seem that he does not necessarily reflect the average Likud party constituent. Is that true?
It's hard for me to see that way. Ner Barkat is the former mayor of Jerusalem, and also, according to all polls at the moment, he's the most popular figure within the Likud voters. So he is very rich.
Because he was my mayor, I think of him as someone who has been able to sort of play all sides in that sense, and does not necessarily represent only Likud party sensibilities. Maybe that's what I'm thinking about.
Well, I spoke to some Likud loyalists yesterday, and some of them said that his whole region, his political regions, are in Kadima, the now gone party of the former Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. The party does not exist anymore. According to them, he was the campaign manager, you know, field campaign manager and so on. So, but he doesn't have really a strong background in Kadima. He went right to the Likud from the mayorship. And he is very rich because he's a former high-tech executive. So he's using his funds in a way that we didn't know in Israel in the past. And
he doesn't need a crowdfunding campaign.
Right. But there are some thoughts and people are saying that he's buying his way into government. That's, you know, only half true because he also has credentials for being a former mayor and you know, and being a high-tech executive and doing like very successful exits. So, I mean, right now he's an MK, member of the Knesset in the Likud. Netanyahu refused to appoint him for a minister for the last several years only because he saw him as a competition. So there you go for the...
Well, thanks, Tal, for that explanation. And obviously, we'll keep on watching it play out. And thanks, Nathan, for being with us. We will be back tomorrow with another daily briefing. In the meantime, we wish you a good Monday and a good week.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time.
Shalom.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from the Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.